Welcome to Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio for Friday, May 3rd, 2024. Congressman Henry Cuellar, Democrat from Texas, and his wife are indicted on charges of accepting almost $600,000 in bribes related to a company in Azerbaijan and a bank in Mexico. The May jobs report from the Labor Department is out, U.S. economy adding 175,000 jobs. Jay Johnson, former Homeland Security Secretary and a Columbia University trustee, says he supports the decisions taken by the school's president in dispersing, and in many cases arresting, pro-Palestinian protesters. U.S. House Judiciary Committee holds a field hearing in Philadelphia about crime in the city. NASA Administrator Bill Nelson holds a pre-launch news conference about Boeing's first crewed spacecraft, the Starliner, and is asked about Boeing's safety record. President Joe Biden awards 19 people the Presidential Medal of Freedom, from politicians Nancy Pelosi and Al Gore to murdered civil rights activist Medgar Evers and Olympic gold medal swimmer Katie Ledecky. First Lady Jill Biden holds a first-ever Teachers of the Year White House state dinner. And Star Wars actor Mark Hamill makes a surprise stop at the White House briefing. From Reuters, U.S. Representative Henry Cuellar and his wife were indicted for allegedly accepting close to $600,000 in bribes in two schemes meant to benefit an Azerbaijani state-owned energy company and an unnamed bank based in Mexico, court papers showed. The indictment, returned by a grand jury on Tuesday and unsealed on Friday, said the bribes were laundered through sham consulting contracts into shell companies owned by Imelda Cuellar, the congressman's wife, from December 2014 through at least November 2021. That was from Reuters. The couple made an appearance in federal court in Houston, each released on a $100,000 bond. Congressman Cuellar said in a statement before the unsealing of the indictment, "I want to be clear that both my wife and I are innocent of these allegations. Everything I've done in Congress has been to serve the people of South Texas. The actions I took in Congress were consistent with the actions of many of my colleagues and in the interest of the American people." He also said he proactively sought legal advice from the House Ethics Committee, which had issued more than one written opinion about the matter. The House Democratic leader, Hakeem Jeffries, called Cuellar a valued member of the House Democratic Caucus, who was entitled to his day in court and the presumption of innocence throughout the legal process. Congressman Jeffries also said that pursuant to House Democratic Caucus rules, Cuellar will step down as the ranking Democrat on the Homeland Security Appropriations Subcommittee. And now to the jobs report, this from CNN. The U.S. economy added just 175,000 jobs last month, and the unemployment rate rose to 3.9%, according to the latest data from the Labor Department. The latest snapshot on U.S. employment was expected to show that the U.S. economy added 235,000 jobs last month, and the jobless rate stayed at 3.8%. That was from CNN. Acting Labor Secretary Julie Hsu was interviewed today on Bloomberg Television.
We've heard from the reports. The Fed would seem to be happy with this kind of jobs report. The market is certainly happy. It's this Goldilocks potentially softening to have a landing of this economy, to a soft landing. What we're seeing right now with this softer report, and the market's certainly taking it in stride. Is that the consensus as well in the read from the Biden administration?
Yes, that's exactly right. This is another strong jobs report, and these numbers just keep showing us month after month that President Biden's economic strategy is working. It's everything you said. It continues to be strong, stable growth, sustainable growth as well. The unemployment rate is still under 4%. That's the 27-month straight that that is the case. And the prime age labor force participation rate remains strong. It ticked up a little bit. And for women, it's the highest it has been since this number's been recorded, which was begun in 1948. So this is a strong jobs report that continues to be indicative of a very strong economy.
Acting Labor Secretary Julie Hsu interviewed on Bloomberg Television. President Biden posting on X, with today's report of 175,000 new jobs, the American comeback continues. Congressional Republicans are fighting to cut taxes for billionaires and let special interests rip folks off. I'm focused on job creation and building an economy that works for the families I grew up with. Senator Rick Scott, Republican from Florida, posting on X, more people are working multiple jobs and still struggling to get by because of the double punch of Biden's bad job market and inflation that's up more than 19% since he took office. The sooner Biden admits his failures and reverses course, the better. Former President Donald Trump, the expected Republican presidential nominee running against Joe Biden, the expected Democratic presidential nominee this year, spoke to reporters outside the courtroom in New York City, where he is attending his hush money criminal trial.
They've asked me to speak a little bit about the job numbers, and the job numbers just came out, and they're horrible. And I say that not happily, I say that very unhappily. But the numbers are horrible. It's just these people are destroying our country. Here's another sign of it. So as you probably know, before I did, the job numbers came out. They're really, really low, really bad. Our economy's bad. And now it's starting to show. So you'll see. And it'll only get worse. It'll only get worse. We're only going one way with the so-called leadership. There is no leadership.
Donald Trump outside the courtroom in New York City after he spoke about a few other subjects. A reporter asked him what he would do if elected again to create jobs.
What is your plan to improve jobs?
For jobs?
The job numbers.
What's my plan for jobs, you said?
Yes.
My plan for jobs is to drill, baby, drill, to bring energy down, to close up the border, to get rid of all the criminals that are being allowed into our country. You know, our country is being inundated with criminals from all over the world. The jail populations from all over the world are way down because they're driving them into America. They're dropping them off in the good old USA. And they're taking them out of mental institutions, and they're taking them out of jails from all over the world, not just South America. And all of this, all of this is greatly affecting our country and very negatively. Now we're going to make America great again. Thank you very much.
Former President Donald Trump. Wall Street today, the Dow up 450, NASDAQ up 315, S&P up 63. Associated Press reports that Nippon Steel said Friday it has postponed the expected closing of its $14.1 billion takeover of U.S. Steel by 3 months, after the U.S. Department of Justice requested more documentation related to the deal. Tokyo-based Nippon Steel Corporation said the deal, already approved by U.S. Steel's shareholders, is still expected to go through. The sale has drawn opposition from President Joe Biden's administration on economic and national security grounds and from former President Donald Trump, the likely Republican presidential candidate in November's elections. That was from AP. From the New York Times, protests against the war in Gaza were more muted at many American campuses on Friday after crackdowns earlier this week, though there were some new arrests, including in New York. And the University of Chicago, considered a leader in student expression by many, signaled that it might be reaching its limit with demonstrators. Elsewhere, administrators warily tried to turn their focus toward graduations, including some this weekend on campuses such as Northeastern and Ohio State that have had demonstrations and arrests. Still, the wave of student activism continued to spread, including to some universities outside the United States. That was from the New York Times. Jay Johnson, former Homeland Security Secretary in the Obama administration, is a Columbia University trustee. He was asked today at an American Bar Association discussion in Washington about protecting democracy, about the protests at Columbia that started the recent wave around the country.
I'm a graduate of the law school. My father went to Columbia. Two of my uncles went to Columbia. My grandfather has an honorary degree from Columbia. And the decisions that President Shafiq faced about what to do with the encampment, with the protesters, the most difficult set of decisions that I think I've ever seen in government or out of government, dealing in an academic environment. But there are two overriding principles that I think those of us in higher education, those of us who are trustees, have to bring to this situation. One is, Judge Luttig knows this better than me, no constitutional right is unqualified. At a university, in a city, on government grounds, people have the right to exercise, the First Amendment, engage in free speech, but always subject to time, place, and manner restrictions. Always. The other overriding principle is for a university president, for a university, for a school, the safety and welfare of all of the students and the university itself is paramount. And I fully support the Columbia president's decisions that she had to make. We were hoping for a constructive negotiated resolution to the with the students who were in the encampments. But once people began occupying Hamilton Hall, we had no choice but to call in the NYPD. The situation was spiraling out of control. And my hat's off to the New York City Police Department. They did a remarkably professional job in addressing the situation. But we go on. There will continue to be challenges. I hope that the day after will be the first day that we begin the healing process, and that for those who are in encampments, who are demonstrating, who are protesting, I think should not lose sight of. I worry that what's happening on colleges and university campuses right now is becoming a domestic political issue at the expense of highlighting the plight of Palestinian people in Gaza. I think we're at risk of losing sight of what started all of this. And it's been a very, very difficult set of challenges, unlike any we've faced since probably 1968.
Jay Johnson, who was Homeland Security Secretary in the Obama administration and a Columbia University trustee, today at an American Bar Association program in Washington on democracy. Jay Johnson is a co-chair of the ABA Task Force for American Democracy, and he mentioned the panelists with him, the other co-chair, retired Federal Appeals Court Judge Michael Luttig. Multiple news outlets have reported that more than 2,000 arrests have been made on U.S. campuses over the last 2 weeks related to the pro-Palestinian protests. Story from CNN today, Congressman James Clyburn, Democratic congressman from South Carolina, expressed concerns about how the college campus protests across the country could impact President Joe Biden's second-term presidential run, agreeing with Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont, who warned that Biden's stance over Israel's war on Gaza may have alienated young voters. Both Democrats drew a parallel between the current protests and those that occurred during the presidency of Lyndon B. Johnson in the late 1960s, when American students protested against the Vietnam War. This is the reporting from CNN. They include a quote from the interview that Congressman Clyburn did this morning, and it is, "I was around during the Vietnam War, all those things that made us a great society, Johnson was the engineer of, and all that went down the drain because of Vietnam. These kinds of issues could very well be taking over, so I share that concern that we have got to be very careful that we do not stymie protests." The White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre was asked about this at her news conference.
One of the recipients today of the Presidential Medal of Freedom will be Congressman Jim Clyburn. He had some comments earlier today where he agreed with Senator Bernie Sanders' assertion that the Israel-Hamas war could be President Biden's Vietnam. What's your response to that?
So, look, a couple of things. I want to be super careful because that's kind of leading into a campaign space. So I want to be really mindful on what I say. And a couple of things that, you know, I did think through on those, on this, knowing we probably get this potential question. Look, Joe Biden ended the longest war in American history and just succeeded in convincing both parties in Congress to make crucial investments in our national security in Ukraine to help ensure we won't be drawn into conflict in Europe. And that is the president's leadership that you have seen, right? And that is one of the reasons he's been able to bring NATO together in a way that we have not seen before. And obviously one of the reasons we had to do that is because we had to make sure that Putin didn't succeed. He didn't succeed. And so the president has been taking action, obviously, on that for the past more than 2 years. You heard him say yesterday he reiterated values that being that being us together, we have the right to dissent, right? But it must be peaceful, it must be peaceful, and anti-Semitism is horrid. It is hate speech, and we should treat it as hate speech. And there is overwhelming support for his agenda, whether it's having, you know, rich special interests pay their fair share. If you think about what the president's been fighting for, especially dealing with Congress, making sure that the billionaires and corporation pay their fair share, and making sure that we're building an economy that helps everyone, that doesn't leave anyone behind. And so you've heard him talk about that, beating Big Pharma, lowering health care costs, making sure that we move forward with his student debt relief. And so those are things that the president, and those agendas are incredibly popular. And so he's going to continue to do that work. And obviously, Congressman Clyburn is someone that he truly respects. We all respect, and so just, you know, wanna be mindful, because it's connected to a campaign related question. But this is a president who has taken action to make sure that he does everything, you know, on behalf of that's right, whether it's national security or moving forward with domestic policies that the American people want us to move forward on.
So the White House disagrees with that characterization.
Look, I think I just laid out what we believe we have been able to accomplish here in the more than 3 years in this administration. I think they have their opinions, and they're allowed to their opinions, and we respect what their opinions on this.
White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre at her news conference in the White House briefing room. This is Washington Today. From the Washington Times, the mother of American reporter Austin Tice told a congressional panel on Tuesday that she is convinced her son is still alive, nearly 12 years after he was abducted in Syria at a checkpoint in a contested area west of Damascus. Deborah Tice told members of the House Foreign Affairs Committee that her information about her son's status isn't just wishful mom talk. She said, "Austin is alive and no doubt eager to walk free. It would not be prudent for me to share the source." The Times article continues that Mr. Tice, an award-winning journalist and former U.S. Marine Corps officer, was among 8 Americans detained abroad who were represented on the panel by family members or supporters at a special congressional event Tuesday. At least 50 Americans are believed to be held hostage by hostile governments like Syria or Russia, officials said, reporting from the Washington Times. Deborah Tice today was interviewed at the National Press Club by its president, Emily Wilkins, a CNBC correspondent. And one question was about a bill that recently passed the House of Representatives.
I think there's one interesting piece of legislation. It didn't get a lot of attention. It wasn't one of those big bills that everyone fought over. H.R. 3202, the Assad Regime Anti-Normalization Act of 2023. It has already passed the House. It is now gone over to the Senate. Deborah, can you talk a little bit about this bill and what its passage could mean for Austin?
Okay, yes. Yes, I can. I was in a roundtable before the House Foreign Affairs Committee this week, talking specifically about this bill and how it affects Austin. And this is, the thing is, this bill is a really hateful bill. It even has a hateful title that talks about something like against the Assad regime in Syria or something, a title like that. And what it calls for is no engagement by the United States government, no engagement by businesses doing business in America, and no engagement by our allies. That is entirely ridiculous. And the impact on Austin by his government would be a life sentence. If we cannot engage, we cannot bring Austin home. And so I want to talk about who is behind this bill and how did this bill get approved on the floor with suspended rules, 389 representatives signed on to this bill. Those that have been asked to talk about what the bill is and what it's about don't know. They can't tell me what they signed for. They just knew, here's this bill. I'm going to see my constituents in 2 days. Want to get a long list of bills completed. That's how that happened. So the real power behind the bill is the U.S.-based Syrian opposition lobby. This lobby is trying to keep alive a civil war that is 13 years old and is over.
Deborah Tice, mother of reporter Austin Tice, who is being held hostage in Syria now a dozen years, speaking today at the National Press Club. That bill that she talked about was debated on the House floor on February 13th. One supporter, Congresswoman Kathy Manning, Democrat from North Carolina.
It is with deep sadness that I note that it has been over 13 years since the Syrian people first rose up for their basic rights and have subsequently endured brutal assaults by Assad's Russian and Iranian-backed military year after year. The Assad regime has unceasingly engaged in a campaign of violence against the Syrian people, committing what has amounted to countless war crimes and the most egregious violations of international humanitarian law. As we consider this bill today, it's critical we acknowledge that the war has resulted in the deaths of over 600,000 Syrians and more than 8 million displaced. The regime continues to regularly target hospitals, schools, and neighborhoods, and hundreds of thousands of Syrians face bleak prospects for the future. It is in this context we consider this bill, which responds to moves by some governments to look past these atrocities and readmit the Assad regime into international institutions. The Biden administration has opposed efforts to re-engage with the Assad regime and continues to highlight ongoing crimes against the Syrian people. I stand with the administration and those who believe Assad must be held accountable, and I'm glad that members of both parties have stood together to publicly condemn the welcoming of the Assad regime back into the Arab League.
Congresswoman Kathy Manning, Democrat from North Carolina, on the House floor in mid-February, debating a bill that passed that was criticized today by Deborah Tice, mother of Austin Tice, a reporter who was abducted and presumably still being held in Syria for about a dozen years. The House and Senate are not in session today in Washington. The House Judiciary Committee held a field hearing in Philadelphia, talking about violent crime in the city. The committee's Republican majority wrote, "The field hearing, titled Victims of Violent Crime in Philadelphia, will examine how Philadelphia District Attorney Larry Krasin's pro-criminal policies embolden criminals at the expense of victims and Philadelphia residents." Congressman Jim Jordan, Republican from Ohio, is the committee chair.
When you don't prosecute bad guys, you shouldn't be surprised that you get more crime. When you defund the police, you shouldn't be surprised when you get more crime. And when you have a designated area for illegal drug use, you shouldn't be surprised when you get more crime. Philadelphia is doing all three of those things. And that's why we've seen the increase in crime we've seen in this great American city. And when you do those things, there are real consequences. Real bad things can happen when you engage in those kind of policies. And we're going to hear from witnesses today who will talk about the terrible things that have happened to loved ones within their family. At our field hearing in Manhattan, we looked at the administration of justice and the safety of communities. The committee continued to examine these principles with the field hearing in Chicago and, of course, hearings in Washington, D.C. Today, of course, we're here in Philadelphia to once again look at the administration of justice and keeping our communities safe. It appears Philadelphia is living up to its 1969, what the New York Times said in 1969, the nickname, quote, gang capital of America. By the end of 2023, Philadelphia surpassed 400 homicides, and there have been 24 in the first 30 days of this calendar year. Manhattan, Chicago, Washington, and Philadelphia have violent crime problems. But this is not the only thing they have in common. They all have soft-on-crime prosecutors who favor the criminals over the victims and their families. Since the current district attorney for Philadelphia, Larry Krasner, began his tenure in 2018, violent crime, particularly homicides, have increased, with crime rates reaching a peak in 2021. Philadelphia crime occurs so frequently and so drastically that there is a Twitter account, Philly Crime Update, to maintain a running database of the public, for the public, excuse me, to be informed of major crimes throughout the city in real time.
Congressman Jim Jordan, Republican from Ohio, chair of the Judiciary Committee at a field hearing of the committee in Philadelphia. Congresswoman Mary Gay Scanlon, Democrat from Pennsylvania, is a member of that committee attending today's hearing, and her district, part of it, is in Philadelphia.
I would have been delighted to welcome the Judiciary Committee to Philadelphia for a thoughtful and honest discussion about how violent crime has dramatically declined in Philadelphia in recent years, the challenges our city continues to face, and how the federal government can help. But that's not what's happening here today. Chairman Jordan has not convened the House Judiciary Committee in the city of brotherly love and sisterly affection to explore how Congress can help to reduce violent crime in Philadelphia or anywhere else. Instead, he's brought his traveling circus to town in order to divide Americans, scare voters, influence elections, and distract from the crushing failure of the House majority to govern in this Congress. Chairman Jordan wants to convince people that gun violence is a Philadelphia problem. But the truth is, gun violence is an American problem that is traumatizing families in every corner of every community across this great land. So let's start by making three things clear. One, contrary to the statistics cited by the chairman, violent crime in Philadelphia has decreased dramatically in recent years. Two, our entire country continues to face a daily epidemic of gun violence. Three, that senseless violence is not inevitable. It's enabled by lawmakers who choose to sow chaos with political stunts like this hearing instead of doing their damn jobs. What makes today's sham hearing even more offensive is that while our Republican colleagues are trying to score political points here off the pain of families who have suffered grievous losses, they're simultaneously blocking votes on bills that would prevent gun violence in Philadelphia and across the country by keeping weapons out of dangerous hands and off our neighborhood streets.
Congresswoman Mary Gay Scanlon, Democrat from Pennsylvania, at the House Judiciary Committee field hearing today in Philadelphia. The invited witnesses included the widow of a Philadelphia police officer and the father of a murdered Temple University officer. Washington Today continues in a moment.
Hi, it's Kayla from C-SPAN. Imagine 45 years ago when there was just a handful of television networks. C-SPAN first went on the air bringing an unfiltered view of government directly to America's living rooms. No spin, no commentary, just pure democracy in action.
And it's Greta from C-SPAN. It was a bold experiment. We finally had a front row seat to Congress, the White House, and the campaign trail, all without government funding.
As we celebrate 45 years and a legacy of unfiltered access, we ask for your support of a donation in honor of our four decades of service. Your gift, no matter how big or small, will help maintain this vital resource for access to the democratic process.
You can help ensure another 45 years of witnessing history unfold and empowering citizens to be informed and engaged in the political process. Visit cspan.org/donate today and join our 45th anniversary campaign.
Thank you for supporting C-SPAN, your unfiltered view of government. Visit cspan.org/donate today to make your gift of support. Thank you.
Welcome back to Washington Today, available as a podcast wherever you find your podcasts and on the free C-SPAN Now mobile app. Boeing's Starliner, writes Forbes, is set to carry astronauts into space for the first time on Monday, a major milestone for the aerospace giant after years of trouble and setbacks as it tries to catch up with Elon Musk's SpaceX and NASA's efforts to nurture commercial partners and grow the budding space economy. NASA Administrator Bill Nelson held a news conference previewing the launch at Kennedy Space Center in Florida.
Because it is a test flight, we give extra attention. They're checking out a lot of the systems, the life support, the manual control, all of those things that you want to be checked out. That's why we put two test pilots on board. And of course, the resumes of Butch and Sonny are extensive. The other thing to comment about this flight is this is all a part of our commercial activities. So you've already seen commercial crew and cargo to orbit with the Dragon and other cargo vehicles. This will give us that additional capability because we always look for a backup.
Administrator Bill Nelson, part of his opening statement at today's news conference. The first question to him was about Boeing's safety record.
Marcia Dunn, Associated Press for Mr. Nelson. What personal assurances have you gotten from Boeing that the safety issues on the airplane side have not spilled over into the spacecraft side? And have you talked directly to Dave Calhoun about any of this?
I've talked to Dave Calhoun many times. Most recently, since the aircraft division of Boeing has had the most recent problems with those bolts on the panel falling out. But Dave Calhoun, when I first met him, he introduced me to his new head of Boeing Defense and Space. And he said, this guy is a good one. And he said, he is going to make sure that everything is working in that defense and space sector, which includes the Starliner. And my interpretation and observation is just like has been reported to you today, that they have done it without a hitch. That this is a clean spaceship and it's ready to launch. And I can tell you from NASA's point of view, we don't launch until it's ready.
NASA Administrator Bill Nelson at Kennedy Space Center, Merritt Island, Florida. An article at space.com, pending the success of the crew flight test mission, Boeing will join SpaceX in sending operational 6-month-long crewed missions to the International Space Station. Both companies received commercial crew contracts from NASA in 2014, with Boeing's valued at $4.2 billion back then compared to SpaceX's $2.6 billion. President Joe Biden presenting the Presidential Medal of Freedom, the U.S.'s highest civilian honor, to 19 people today. They include Democratic members of Congress James Clyburn and Nancy Pelosi, former Republican Senator Elizabeth Dole, former Republican New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg, former Democratic Vice President Al Gore, former Secretary of State John Kerry, also Ellen Ochoa, the first Hispanic woman in space, civil rights activist Medgar Evers, Clarence Jones, and Opal Lee, journalist and talk show host Phil Donahue, Olympic athletes Jim Thorpe and Katie Ledecky, and Academy Award-winning actress Michelle Yeoh. The ceremony was at the White House. Here's part of the president's statement.
61 years ago, President Kennedy established the Presidential Medal of Freedom to recognize, quote, any person who has made an especially meritorious contribution to the security of national interests of the United States or world peace, cultural or other significant public or private endeavors. You know, in the first class of medal recipients, was a great, great American writer, E.B. White. Years after receiving the medal, he received a letter from someone who was losing faith in humanity. And E.B. White replied, and I quote, relentless curiosity, inventiveness, ingenuity have led to deep trouble. We can only hope that these same traits will enable us to claw our way out. Hang on to your hat, hang on to your hope, wind the clock. And tomorrow is another day. Today, we have another extraordinary honor to bestow on the nation's highest civilian honors of 19 incredible people whose relentless curiosity, inventiveness, ingenuity, and hope have kept faith in a better tomorrow.
You know, we see that faith in Father Greg Boyle, who has changed countless lives and pastor of a disadvantaged Catholic parish in Los Angeles. Father, you through your pioneering gang intervention programs. You know, I was a kid. I was taught by the Norbertines in a public school. Well, you know, they always were worried we were going to go to Jesuit colleges because they said, you guys are too liberal. Thank God for the Jebbies. Thank God. That was my staff hates me doing ad-libbing. Your service as a Jesuit priest over four decades reminds us of the power of redemption, rehabilitation, and our obligation to those who have been condemned or counted out. Thank you, Father Grave, for your amazing grace. Thank you. For some of you today, I know personal experience that you wish you'd never had to be an event like this one without a piece of your soul having been gone. Judy Shepherd, it's been 25 years, Judy, since we last spoke of your beloved Matthew. Your husband Dennis is here today as well. The brutal murder of your son galvanized the movement into a law in his name to protect LGBTQ Americans. Your relentless advocacy is a reminder that we must give hate no safe harbor, and that we can turn it into purpose, and that pain you follow into significant purpose. You've done just that. Thank you.
President Joe Biden at the White House presenting the Presidential Medal of Freedom to 19 individuals. You heard him talk about just two of them. You'll be able to find the video of the full ceremony at our video library, cspan.org. From Associated Press, First Lady Jill Biden on Thursday paid tribute to her fellow teachers, hosting the 2024 National and State Teachers of the Year at a swanky White House dinner to honor their commitment to their students and excellence in the classroom. The National and State Teachers of the Year typically attend a White House ceremony after they're selected by an organization that represents elementary and secondary school educators. But Jill Biden, who has taught English and writing at Northern Virginia Community College since 2009, added a new twist by honoring the teachers at a state dinner instead. That was from Associated Press. Here's the First Lady.
You look at your students and don't just see who they are today. You see all the possibility of tomorrow. You help them find that light within themselves. And that light lives on in all of you. Tonight, as I look out at the glow of all these candles, you all shine so brightly. This room represents potential, the glittering hope ahead, what we give to the next generation. When I was a little girl, my grandmother would take me to school with her. And it was a one-room schoolhouse in a small town in South Jersey. She loved her work, and her students loved her in return. And she used to call her students to class with a big brass bell. Yes, it was that long ago. So when she died, she didn't leave behind a giant estate. But what I inherited from her, what I still have that till today, is that bell. And sometimes I think about the way her legacy resonated into the world like, waves of sound, changing those who heard its ring. I think of every student she taught and wonder, what amazing things they grew up to do. Perhaps they are public servants working to make our communities a little stronger or a little fairer. Perhaps they are doctors saving lives, or architects building cities, or scientists working to solve our global challenges. And of course, there's at least one teacher. Today, all of you ring your own bell, pulling each person you teach into a harmony that never ends. Right now, someone out there is a better thinker because of you.
First Lady Jill Biden, Thursday night at the Teachers of the Year State Dinner at the White House, the first time ever this has been done. The Council of Chief State School Officers oversees the National Teacher of the Year program, and the 2024 National Teacher of the Year is Missy Testerman, who teaches English as a second language at Rogersville City School in Rogersville, Tennessee. Story from NPR, Star Wars actor Mark Hamill made a surprise appearance in the White House press briefing on Friday, telling reporters he had just come from the Oval Office, though the purpose of his visit was unclear. Hamill is best known for playing Luke Skywalker in the Star Wars movie franchise, but he has also become known for his social media posts praising Biden and panning former President Donald Trump. That was from NPR. Here's a bit of what happened.
How many of you had Mark Hamill lead the press briefing on your bingo card? Hands? Yeah, me either. And look, I just got to meet the president, and he gave me these aviator glasses. Oh, yeah. I love the merch. Love it all. But listen, I just wanted to say I was honored to be asked to come to the White House to meet the president, the most legislatively successful president in my lifetime. And, you know, I don't have to go through the list, the bipartisan infrastructure law, the PACT Act, the CHIPS Act, all of that, inflation, 15 million jobs. Look, it's all good. I mean, I was really thrilled to meet the entire staff because, you know, it's not just one person. It's like a composite endeavor. And all these people, my goodness, you know, I mean, I have no idea. I had no idea just what went into what is on his plate on a daily basis. So that's pretty much it. I'm open to questions, although no Star Wars questions, please. But I want to say once again how grateful I am. And it just shows you that one person can be so influential and so positive in our lives. And again, thank you so much. And Peter Baker, I loved your book. Yes.
Wow. Thank you, Mark Hamill, for being here. What did you ask? What did you talk about with the president?
Well, first of all, I only expected to be there for like 5 minutes. He showed us all his photographs, and, you know, it was really amazing to me because, you know, I was invited to the Carter White House, and I came, and then I came to the Obama White House. But I never was invited into the Oval Office, and it was a large gathering. So this one was really extra special.
All right, sir.
So, yes.
Can Biden bring up Star Wars too, sir?
Well, you know, I called him Mr. President. He said, you can call me Joe. And I said, can I call you Obi-Wan Kenobi? And he liked that. But listen, I'm not really here to dominate. I have to turn it back over to our wonderful Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre. So thank you all so much.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you so much for being here. I gotta get those shades.
Actor Mark Hamill, best known for playing Luke Skywalker in the Star Wars movies, today in the White House briefing room. Washington Examiner reporting on this, writing that Hamill claimed his expectation was to be with the president for 5 minutes, but he was given an exclusive look at Biden's photos and met his staff. The actor did not mention any discussion about policies. He has been involved in Ukraine's war with Russia as he voices a downloadable app that notifies Ukrainians of air raids. Thanks for listening to Washington Today. Subscribe to C-SPAN's free evening newsletter, Word for Word, and you'll get the stories making headlines in Washington sent to your inbox every day. Sign up at cspan.org/connect. Have a good night and weekend.